Sentire Media.
Hello, you. You're listening to A History of Italy, a Sentire Media podcast. Episode 167, The Italian Wars 4. Charles has left the building. E così ritorno su, lascio i colli nelle valli, tra due salici piangenti, io ritrovo la speranza di un amore che ormai fu. In the last episode, we accompanied Charles VIII, King of France, out of Naples as things were getting a bit tense. Up north, Duke of Milan Ludovico Sforza, who had originally called Charles into Italy, was now besieging the king's ally, Louis, Duke of Orléans, in Novara. Venice, Milan, the Papal States, the King of Spain and Sicily, Ferdinand II of Aragon, and Holy Roman Emperor Maximilian had formed a Holy League, or League of Venice, which was not openly, but evidently anti-French, and the ousted King of Naples, Ferrandino, had landed on the mainland after escaping to Sicily. He was joined by a general sent by his cousin, King Ferdinand of Spain, Gonzalo Fernandez de Córdoba. King Ferrandino of Naples led his troops to the town of Seminara, in the current-day province of Reggio Calabria, where, on the 28th of June, 1495, he was met by a French force. Initially, things went well for him. But pretty soon, his Calabrian troops panicked in the face of the highly trained and experienced French and Swiss troops, and the Neapolitan king, who had fought very bravely, was not able to rally them. The king, his bloodlust roused, was now surrounded, and his horse felled under him. At this point, a long-term loyal friend of the king, Giovanni di Capua, seeing his king and friend in danger, went to him and offered his horse. The king, knowing the danger his friend would face, hesitated, and Giovanni supposedly said, "With me dies nothing. With the king is the life and health of an entire people." The king took the horse and managed to escape, while Giovanni was cut down and killed. Despite their victory, the tide was turning against the French. The people had soured towards them, and Ferrandino was able to enter Naples on the 7th of July. The French forces in the city retreated to their fortresses, but eventually they would capitulate. A French relief force came along and actually gained another victory, but the French governor, the Comte du Montpensier, did not hear about it and ended up reaching terms with Ferrandino. This was quite representative of the chaos that would happen any time something went down in the Kingdom of Naples, since any war was often a war against an invading power, such as Hungarians or French, but also a civil war, with the barons of the realm who sided with said invading army. Something we should always keep in mind about Italy is the stark contrast between North and South, which is still very evident today, but we know it dates back to the times when the Normans founded the Kingdom of Sicily, creating a unified entity in a land that was otherwise made of many fractured entities. This doesn't mean, however, that both in the Kingdom of Sicily and the Kingdom of Naples, there was no push for autonomy. There was indeed quite a strong one. With all of this mess unfolding, the Venetians continue with their contribution, harrying the French holdings along the coast of Puglia, and actually taking the town of Monopoli. Yes, there is a town to this day in southern Italy called Monopoli, but with an I instead of a Y at the end. Meanwhile, King Charles was on his way north. He stopped off in Siena. We haven't spoken a whole lot about Siena so far. For the moment, we'll just mention that it was still an independent republic at the time of our narrative, as it had been since 1126, and still had another 60 years to go, squashed as it was between the Republic of Florence to the north and the Papal States to the east and south. By the end of the 16th century, both republics, Florence and Siena, would disappear into the Grand Duchy of Tuscany, but that is a story for another day. although Siena may get its own episode too. In any case, Charles was asked to intervene in local Sienese affair, made a bit of a mess of it, and then went on. The next issue to look at was that of Pisa and Florence. First of all, you may remember me saying that Pisans and Florentines hated each other, and perhaps still hate each other. There is a saying in Florentine that goes, "Meglio morto in casa che un Pisano all'uscio." Better a death in the family than a Pisan on the doorstep. Having said this, the same can be said of many combinations of confining Italian cities who hated and hate each other. Anyway, the Pisans wanted the French to guarantee their independence from Florence, while the Florentines wanted Pisa back. The French wanted to keep their very rich allies, the Florentines, happy, but also saw the advantage of having their own influence over an important Tuscan port city like Pisa. Charles's solution was to not go either way, making vague promises on both sides, but mainly supporting Pisa through the representative he left there, Robert de Balzac, Baron d'Étranger. The result was around 15 years of a confusing war, with Milan and Venice getting involved supporting Pisa, then Milan changing their mind, then the French selling off bits of Pisan holdings to Genoa and Lucca and so on. The end result, despite fierce resistance from the Pisans, admired by all, including the Florentines themselves, was that Pisa would end up once again under Florence and, in time, become part of the Grand Duchy of Tuscany. Once again, that is for the future. Our future. But also their future, of course. Now Charles had to get out of Tuscany. If you are in Tuscany and heading north, there are two ways you can go out. One is along the coast and up through Liguria. The other is through the Apennine Mountains into Emilia. That is the route Charles took, specifically through the Cisa Pass, and that is where the forces of the Holy League were waiting for him. The League had placed their army under Francesco II Gonzaga, Marquis of Mantua. Along with Siena, we haven't spoke about Mantua much either, and that has been very naughty of us, and we should correct it with an episode on the Gonzaga and Mantua. For now, Charles had made his way through the pass and camped near the town of Fornovo, on the river Taro, in the current-day province of Parma, near where the League was waiting for him. As with most places in Italy, the Taro Valley is a very nice place to wait for an army. Not too far away is one of my favourite castles, the Castle of Bardi, which I did a Halloween episode on, The Ghost of the Castle of Bardi. The only drawback of visiting the province of Parma nowadays is that they are really keen on their speed cameras over there, so you're almost sure to get a speeding ticket, unless, of course, you're not Italian and have the amazing ability to conform to speed limits. Parma, of course, is known for the famous Parma ham, Fellino salami, and the Parmigiano Reggiano cheese, although I am now compelled, once I mentioned it, to stress that most of that kind of cheese is made on our side of the Enza River in the province of Reggio Emilia. So if you want the good stuff, you make sure you buy Parmigiano Reggiano and not Parmesan. Anyway, shockingly, I digress. So, we had the Holy League army headed by Francesco Gonzaga, so also including some Mantuans, but mainly made up of Milanese and Venetians, facing the incoming French army made of French, Germans, Swiss, and some Italians. The Allies had around 20,000 troops to the King's around 11,000. After actually occupying the town of Fornovo, in the early morning hours of the 6th of July 1495, Charles sent out a scouting party of about 40 men. They were sighted and attacked by an allied force of around 600, with most of the scouting party being killed and their heads stuck on pikes to be marched triumphantly back to the League camp. The French then took positions on the left side of the river, the artillery aiming in that direction with the allies on the right side. The churning waters of the Taro had been engorged by a summer storm that had also made the surrounding fields highly impractical for manoeuvring the artillery. Charles on one side and Francesco Gonzaga on the other had rallying speeches about how rubbish and cowardly the other side were and focusing very much on the promise of booty. This emphasis is one of the elements that are kept in mind when trying to figure out who actually won the ensuing battle, if anyone actually did win it. Gonzaga's plan was to separate his forces and cross the river in different positions, distracting the vanguard, where the French expected the main attack, to then attack the rear. This plan went off the rails pretty quickly due to the conditions of the river and the terrain. The French were able to get their act together and pretty much resist, not being able, however, to cause as much damage as they could have done due to the difficulty with maneuvering their artillery. After about an hour of fierce fighting, the French moved up to higher positions and the exhausted Venetians who were in that point could not follow them. A one-day truce was called, but the Battle of Fornovo was actually over. The French king had been in real personal danger more than once, also at the hands directly of Francesco Gonzaga himself, who had come close to capturing Charles, but had not managed to fight his way through the monarch's numerous personal guard. In the end, Gonzaga's reputation was greatly enhanced by the battle. Another League commander, Bernardino Fortebraccio, managed to survive the battle despite being wounded 25 times, three of which directly to the head, which exposed his brain. He was saved thanks to the fact that his unconscious body was dragged and hidden in a ditch until the end of the battle. In the end, you could say that no side really lost or won, which you could call a draw or a tie, but it was a little bit more complicated. The League had wanted to destroy the French army and had not managed to, but they had seen the enemy off the field, which at the time was considered a win, and they managed to take all of the French supplies and booty. They had, however, suffered greater casualties than the French. The French simply wanted to get out of Italy, and in the end they did, although they had lost all of the booty they had collected during their long Italian campaign. The lost items included one of the king's personal helms, two royal flags, and Charles's own personal private collection of pornography, which at the time meant erotic drawings. Whatever the case may have been, this long and bloody battle with many casualties, use of artillery and harquebusiers, although not decisive in their specific role, was something the Italians were not used to, and the dawn of a new kind of warfare. After Fornovo, the French continued all the way to Asti in Piedmont, the lands of their allies, the Savoy, where they arrived on the 15th of July. Gonzaga and his troops followed along without engaging and then joined Ludovico Sforza at the siege of Novara, where Louis of Orléans was still holding out. By the end of September, his army, decimated by disease, had to give up and leave. He would not be able to make good on his claim to the Duchy of Milan for now. On the 9th of October 1495, the Peace of Vercelli was reached. More of a unilateral peace with Milan than with the League, but it allowed Charles the use of Genoa, a doorway back to try and restake his claim. His honour could be said to be more or less intact. Francesco Gonzaga could now take the rest of the League forces south to help the King of Naples, Ferrandino, and Spanish General Gonzalo de Cordoba with the clean-up operations. The French viceroy, the Comte de Montpensier, ended up surrendering at Atella, in the modern-day region of Basilicata, between the toe and the boot of the peninsula. He would later die of disease in captivity. After all the hubbub, the two main protagonists, Ferrandino of Naples and Charles VIII, evidently did not know what to do with themselves, and so they up and died. In October of 1496, Ferrandino died and was succeeded by his uncle, Federico. Interestingly, the King of Spain, Ferdinand, felt that his claim to the throne was a bit stronger, but he let it slide. For now. In April 1498, Charles of France was on his way to see a game of jeu de pomme, an early form of tennis. On the way, he banged his head on a door frame really hard. He brushed himself off and went off to see his game. On his way back, he fell into a coma and died 9 hours later. He was 27 years old. Since his children had died before him, he was the last of the elder branch of the Valois. The succession fell to his brother-in-law and cousin. Can you guess who that was? That's right. Good old Louis, Duke of Orléans, became King Louis XII, with a kingdom to fix up a bit, but most interesting for our story, a claim to the Duchy of Milan, and a pretty big bone to pick with the Duke, Lodovico il Moro. He wasn't going to let that slide any time soon. Thank you very much for listening. Grazie mille. A History of Italy podcast is a production of Sentire Media, created and hosted by me, Mike Corradi, and produced by my lovely Patreon supporters. Follow A History of Italy wherever you get your podcast, and don't forget, if you loved or even just tolerated this episode, please rate and give us a review. It's very much appreciated. As always, I like to thank some of my Patreon supporters, starting with the third part of the Margherita Hack and Galileo Galilei level donors, and they are Mike M, Neville, Niels, Paradise, Patrizia K, Peter F, Rachel, Rocco B, Roberta D, Rod L, Rodney N, Rudy F, Russell F, Sandra P, Scott L, Sean Shelby, Shelley U, Stephen, and Tapdance Down Under. And of course, we cannot absolutely forget the tippy-top level Maria Montessori and Dante Alighieri level Lisa K, Andrew M, Peter W, David L, David C, JW, Sen, David A, Karen D, Peter F, Helenka, Kaiser Boss, Bridget, Dallas, and Joseph. Thank you, one and all. If, like them, you would like to become a Patreon supporter, you can head to ahistoryofitaly.com and click through to the support page. Then you can have access to extra content and ad-free episodes. Thank you very much if you do so. Once again, thank you very much for listening, and until next time, arrivederci.
Hey, podcast producers and show hosts. Do you want to join a podcast network that celebrates all things Italian? At Sentire Media, we understand the allure of Italy and its unique culture. Our devoted team of hosts and producers are all driven by their shared passion for Italy. And we work tirelessly to create the best lifestyle podcasts and content that will whisk you away to the very heart of Italy. With us, you can savor the mouth-watering flavors, get lost in the stories from the past, break down the cultural barriers, and truly immerse yourself in the vibrant traditions of this intoxicating country. If you have a great podcast idea or are already in production and would like to join Sentire Media, head over to sentiremedia.com, that's S-E-N-T-I-R-E media.com, and find out how to submit your show.